that song called Walking on Sunshine. I've met the guitarist who wrote that, Kimberly Rowe, who's the lead guitarist with Katrina. And that really, that's his pension plan.
Each Day Podcast Radio Show with Bruce Hilliard. Today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by Your Future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Hello and welcome back to the Better Each Day Podcast Radio Show with the most awesome Neil Fitzsimon of Fitzsimon and Brogan.
Thank you.
And you've been at this, I was going to ask your age, but and we've already had a guy chat that we shouldn't have about falling in love with women and stuff like that. So
right.
I guess, the public knows that guys can talk about that openly. But how old are you?
Well, I was born in 1983.
You're young. And you know about analog recording, though. That's funny. I have a TAC 4-track right here sitting in front of me right now that you kind of have to operate manually because the pinch roller motor doesn't work, and you have to punch it up with your thumb. But it still plays, and I still use it.
Oh yeah,
a bit.
That's what we got our record deal. That's what we were using. We were using an 8-track Fostex.
Yeah.
When we did that, and we used to we got signed with another guitarist who was really really good, but let's just say a little bit odd. And he got signed with us. That's the best way to describe it. He was, but we used to work like devils to get that record deal. I used to write a song during the week. He would come up at the weekend and stay at our place. We would work all over that weekend and most probably get two songs completed. He would take them back, mix them, and then we would send them out to record companies that week. And then I would be writing another one for the following weekend. So I think that's what. And we were just using a Fostex, and luckily, after about 6 months of doing this, we got signed just on the strength of the songs. Really, they'd never met us when they decided they wanted to sign us.
You end up being a promoter rather than a songwriter.
Yeah, you do. Well, actually, I've got to admit that I got one of my friends, another musician who's a drummer, who really believed in our stuff. When the record company showed an interest, I sent him in there under the guise of being our manager. And I'm telling you, this friend of mine, he could sell ice to Eskimos. Yeah. He was brilliant. And I sat in Goode Street in London waiting for him to come out of the record company offices because I was too much of a coward to go in. And he came out and he looked all bemused. I said, "How did it go?" He said, "I think they want to sign you."
No way.
And then 2 weeks later, I was having a barbecue at my mum and dad's house. They were away on holiday, and the phone went, and I'd created a bit of a thing that we wanted all of our music back because they weren't making a decision, which was a bit of a cheat, but I thought I'd go for it. And anyway, on the Saturday night, they panicked and they phoned and said, "Look, we're going to offer you a deal and everything." And then the following day, they offered us money as well. So it was quite unbelievable.
Wow. So you've been at this for years, and how long do you think it'll take before you're an overnight sensation?
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's what makes me laugh. Yeah, because what people tend to forget about the Beatles as well is that they've been slogging at it for about 4 or 5 years, like in Hamburg and doing stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, we've done the live thing now, and I wouldn't want to do that again. I was never happy with it, much happier in a studio working there. It would be just great. I mean, what we really hoping for is to get one of our songs in a big film, because I've met people who've done that and they have made a fortune out of it. I worked with a keyboard player who had a song in that film Trainspotting. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's quite a big film in this country, and he earned a million pounds out of that.
Wow.
Which he's now managed to get. He's now managed to blow it. But so yeah, I think that's the holy ground now for a lot of musicians, is to get your film in to get your song in a Hollywood film that gets. I mean, because that that song called "Walking on Sunshine." I've met the guitarist who wrote that, Kimberly Rue, who's the lead guitarist with Katrina, and that really, that's his pension plan.
Wow. That song. One song.
Yeah, he calls it, because I was talking to him in Pat, My Little Earner, he calls that.
A what?
Yeah, that's like an English, like if you can earn a bit of money on the side, you call it, that's a little earner. And of course, with that song, it's there now. It's been used in so many TV and films and everything that he's most probably got royalties coming in all through the year.
Wow, it's a great song. I call it a dance like nobody's watching type song. It's just
crazy. That's what got me into Pat Collier when I heard that, because again, it's like, I think he's done that with our stuff to a certain extent. He gets like the vibrancy and the energy out of you when you're in a studio.
How is that done? That is magic pixie dust stuff there.
Yeah. Because I mean, when we were people often think that when you're in a studio that, you know, you're all set up as a band, like all playing. But it was all done in bits. I mean, the drummer would go in with a guide track that we'd laid down, just a rough guide. He would go and do the drum track over that. Then the bass player would go in and do his bits. And then I'd go and do the rhythm guitar. And, you know, basically we're just sitting down on chairs in the studio doing it. So I don't know how he manages to draw that out of us, because it's not that glamorous at all. Then Trudy, when Trudy actually went to do her vocals, we all had to leave, because he liked to just have the singer there with him, and he turned the lights down in the studio to get a nice atmosphere. And then we went to like the canteen at his studios and went and had a meal while she was doing her vocals. But it was a lovely, relaxed atmosphere he got, and I think that generated that energy.
It never comes across to the listener just what environment you're in when you're performing in the studio. So you're really drawing from deep within. You could be recording in an apartment, in a phone booth, whatever. Yeah. Do they even have phone booths anymore over there? I don't know. You guys call them.
Yeah, we've got a few, yeah.
You call them a different name, I think.
Yeah, a telephone box.
A telephone box.
Yeah.
Okay. To us, that would be the box your telephone came in.
Yeah, I know. You don't see it in the red telephone boxes. I suppose you've seen those. Yeah. But, I mean, you hardly see any of them now. They've all gone.
Your songs stand on their own. I mean, if you only had one of the songs, I mean, it's all a perfect demo, really, of... They all shine. How do you do that?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Wow, a lot of work.
I think that's one thing... that I liked. I mean, like people like Bowie, the Beatles, and Elvis Costello, they could all write different type of songs. And I think I remember something that Costello said early, you know, like in his career, and he said, the last thing I want to do is keep them writing the same song and seeing it disappearing in ever decreasing circles. And I thought that's a really good thing. So that's what we tried to do. The record company, you know, sometimes they say, well, you know, it's hard, what box do we put you in? But I didn't particularly want to be in a box. I just wanted to do good pop music, you know, like pop rock music. Apparently now they've got this new phrase for it, because we've had some great reviews this week online. I mean, if you want, I could always send them to you.
Sure.
Different magazines. And they're calling it dream pop now, would you believe? Indie dream pop. It sounds quite good, actually, but that's what I've always wanted to do. Just not, I mean, because, you know, you've got a song there like The Wounds Are Healing Now, and then you've got The God Give Them Right. I mean, and they are not like happy bedfellows, those two, but I think I don't want to listen to 11 songs all the same. I mean, I could go and buy a Status Quo album and do that, but I don't want to do that.
Girl in the Gilded Cage, that's a cool song, and I call that a choir of bees. In there, just, all of a sudden breaks out, and then wow! Did you study Baroque music or something? Some contrapuntal? It's all over the place.
Yeah, when I wrote that song, I was, you know, really delighted with it, and I called Trudy upstairs to listen to it, and we were staying at her mum's place, and we were really pleased with it. So we took it downstairs, and I played it on the acoustic in front of Trudy's mum. And Trudy's mum actually said to me, "That sounds like Waltzing Matilda." And I said, what? You know, and then there's the big joke now is that that song's actually been played on national radio here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, every time when it came on, I said, oh, look, Waltzing Matilda's on again. So, yeah, she's never been allowed to forget. I just wanted to write in one of those, like, high-energy, like, go-go's and the bangles
yeah.
things, you know what I mean, with the buzzsaw guitar, yeah. And I also, I don't know if you've heard on that, I actually stole the riff from Pretty Vacant by the Sex Pistols, the opening guitar riff, and had that running through the track as well.
It sounds familiar, but I didn't put it together. But Waltzing Matilda, yeah. I like that. That's a new title.
Yeah. I know. It's somewhat like, you know, Diffuse, the jubilation that we were thinking about that song. But then when I played it to the rest of the band, they absolutely loved it. And, it went on from there. And that was like an obvious choice, really, to put on the album.
It's pretty awesome. I'm thinking that you come up with some of the arrangements in the studio.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, definitely. Yeah, we did when it was when we were in a band and we'd work the song through. I would bring it into the rehearsal studio and then I'd play it to them just on a guitar with Trudy. Then, you know, they'd start putting their ideas in. But now. Now it's just a question of we go up there and after I've written it, I'll be sitting there watching the TV with B and I'll just suddenly pause the telly and say, you know what we could do on that chorus now? We could do this and then she'll have an idea. And so we just like, then I'll put that onto like a handheld recorder so that we don't forget any of the idea. And then we just work that into an arrangement. I think the thing we try to do really is not try to copy anyone, even though it might come out and you could think, oh, that's a definite nod. We just get on as the best arrangement we think we can do for that song.
By the time you guys play it and put your spin on something, it's not copying anything at all. It sounds incredibly original to me. Next year, you're releasing an album.
We've got one coming out in the fall. as well.
Okay.
Before that.
Talk about that one. Let's do it in chronological order here if we don't want to mix anybody up.
Yeah. Well, there is another album out there, actually, that we did called His Latest Squeeze. I mean, that's... I don't know if you've come across that yet.
I have.
Oh, you have. Because the single of that, one of the singles, The Cutest and the Coolest, that got to number three in one of the big French download charts, and they actually that prompted them to do a video, which is on YouTube.
If you turn the clock back 5 minutes or 5 years, who cares? And even if some actress reminds you of me, then that's too bad. You gave me away for the sake of an idea. But what it was of that, I'm not too. Oh, you careless little trick. You know why I feel so sad. The cutest and the coolest walk on by. And now you have to put up with that sight. Oh, oh.
Coming out in the fall is The Girl Who Shouted Love at the Heart of the World, which is a bit of a title that I stole from a sci-fi writer that I love, Harlan Ellison, who wrote a story called The Beast That Shouted Love at the Heart of the World, but I just put a girl in. So that and that's coming out in the fall, and that's 14 tracks on that, and that's again produced by Pat Collier.
The Girl Who Shouted Love at the Heart of the World. Yeah, that's sounds pretty heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a song that's not only the title, that is there is a song on that called that, and I did manage to get that into the actual chorus, all that line.
She kept the faith, she made time to show.
So you recorded in Abbey Road studio.
Yeah.
What is that like? I've seen pictures. Well, of course, I've heard what it sounds like, and apparently you can do anything there. So it must have some magic going on.
Yeah, I wish I could say I'd recorded in like number two studio, which was the Beatles, but I did get to go in there actually with one of the EMI engineers because our producer went down with us, and I met him there, and we did some stuff down there, and then I got the tour of, and I stood in studio two, which, and I walked up those steps where George Martin used to sit, which is like, that was such a weird, weird moment. Yeah, really. And then, but the weird thing about EMI, it's like stepping back into a time warp, because when you go in there, all the engineers are wearing white coats with like EMI on them. And it's so like English and like stuffy when you go in there. And you go into the canteen at lunchtime and everything. But, you know, there's all like these boffin, like scientist people walking around. So, but I was really proud to come out of there that day with an Abbey Road with like the traffic lights, you know, the Abbey Road crossing,
yeah,
on the actual thing that I'd done that day of our recording, which I've, you know, I've kept to prove that I was there.
Well, you'd have to do that, but you want one of those lab coats that say EMI on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was really. And when you go there, you go to reception, and then someone is sent down to collect you and take you up there, because it's quite a big complex, Abbey Road, when you get into it. But just the thought of when I was walking up those steps that day, you know, I actually made sure that I crossed over on that crossing and then went up the steps in there. It was just, I thought, I just do not believe this. Well, so it was great, yeah.
And you have to do that. And you can go ahead and enhance your story with whatever you want. I mean, you don't have to be honest like you were just now.
Yeah, I know, it was brilliant.
Yeah, I would be awestruck. Yeah, entirely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, if B ever wants to talk, tell her I'm an okay guy, and I won't ask her the embarrassing shower questions.
No. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll try and get. I mean, if in the meantime, I'll send you a couple of tastes. Just you, I won't put them out on the net yet of the next album.
Oh,
that's
coming
out.
Okay.
Yeah, put about four tracks on there because you've been so, like, you know, supportive of us, which is great. And if you want, I can send you those interviews that Michael's put up this week. I mean, they're going absolutely mad on it, these reviews. It's, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we got three yesterday that was like, I couldn't have written them better myself, to be quite honest.
Could your mom have written it better?
I know, Mom. Yeah, it was unbelievable. But I'll send those and a few more of the tracks if you want. And, perhaps we could talk again when the next album comes out.
That's what I'm thinking. I'll come back and bug you.
Yeah, no, that'd be great.
Okay, well, yeah.
Really brilliant, Bruce.
When you're an overnight sensation, I'm going to come back and beg you to be on the Better Each Day show. So.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch, and it'd be great to speak to you again when the next album comes out.
All right, Neil. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, you take care.
Right, and you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
and we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.